Welcome back to the Wise Men Say, a fortnight off for us because of the international break, if any of you noticed that is. Joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Bark in the studio again is Paul Dobson, aka Sobs from A Love Supreme. He was here last time, he's always welcome of course, but he has a book out that might be of interest to Sullen fans. We'll talk about that later, Sobs, is that okay?
That's fine by me.
We're going to make you discuss a 0-0 draw for 30 minutes first.
Wonderful.
that's the price you pay for promotion. Okay, just the three of us, Gareth. Nice and cosy, like the olden days. We used to have three, didn't we, before four came a thing on the podcast?
I think it was mainly because we couldn't get a fourth guest week in, week out. But now we're big shots and we can acquire four guests. Maybe we just didn't want four guests this week.
Wouldn't be strictly true, but we don't have to tell people that, do we? Okay, talking about the game, we were there, Gareth, and early on in the game, you said to me that it was a slow start for us where we weren't matching the sort of intensity Leicester were putting in. Then we both concluded that that was probably deliberate, and I think it proved, didn't it, when they ran out of steam and we got a control of the game.
Yeah, they did the same thing at Burnley. I know that might frustrate some people thinking, well, we're playing Leicester here, we're not playing, Chelsea or whatever, and we should be going at teams from the start. But, realistically, I don't think we're in a position where we can press teams and stuff like that early on away from home and impose ourselves. I think we've got to ease ourselves into games, and we saw that at the weekend again, like you say.
It was similar to Burnley in that sense, Sobs. The difference being we created a couple of chances this time around. At Burnley, we didn't really look like that was going to happen, but Fletcher and Johnson made the keeper make decent saves.
They did, and we even tried a tricky corner in the second half that Fletcher got to first, but he didn't make much of an effort of his shot and put it well over the top. But it shows a bit of imagination, at least. And we did do that, build ourselves into the game after they'd done what you'd expect them to do and run at you very hard and fast for a while. And it basically, I think Jamie Vardy summed them up. He was having a decent start to the season, but he is what he is. He's come up through the leagues and he's peaked.
Wasn't impressed at all by Jamie Vardy.
He ran around a lot.
He ran around like headless chicken and fouling people, from my memory.
Yeah.
Before we get into the game, analyse it sort of in closer inspection, Gareth, was it disappointing that we couldn't sort of maintain the control? Because the second half was more an even affair, wasn't it?
Just, it got a bit scrappy, a bit more stretched. I think, if we'd taken that chance in the first half, then that's when he can really, put pressure on them in the second half and it opens up, and that's a sign of a Sunderland team under Poyet, is that they do that. If they can get that early goal, we tend to find more goals easier to come by. Even if we go ahead and then a team equalises, we still seem to, if we get an early goal, put ourselves in a position to get more. But it just didn't. He didn't take the chances, the minute amount of chances that we had.
So we'll hear from Gus on the game.
Yes.
We were, for long periods I felt that we were comfortable on the pitch. Of course, you will always playing away from home. You're going to have one or two actions that you need to defend well. But overall, we were in the half. We didn't find ourselves defending 1v1 a lot against the white player. So there were plenty of things that we were doing well. It was that shot on target, that head on target, that action we created from different situations. I think we had the best chance of the game, with Fletcher in the first half. So, a good team. We were a good team today, and I'm pleased. I'm very pleased with the way that we play, and sometimes it's not enough. And sometimes we will play worse and we will get 3 points.
Gus can't give people exactly what they want, Sobs, can they? Because people get frustrated that we're drawn 0-0.
Yeah.
If with respect to these players, if we went out gung-ho, we would get murdered in this division.
Probably not by teams like Leicester, but it wouldn't be a good thing to do. You're right. But he's caught between a rock and a hard place on that matter. He can't play, like you say, flying forward football right from the start. Otherwise, we'll get caught out. But when you go away from home, keep a clean sheet.
Yeah.
It's a positive thing.
And we're ticking over, aren't we? I keep saying to Gareth that if you look at sides that normally come up to the stadium and like and win, Tottenham, Man United, Everton, those sides have normally come away with 3 points generally in the last two or three years. Anyway, we've got a point from each of those, so we're improving in that aspect. We're going away from home. We've got a couple of draws. It's just going to be by the time some of those sides come to the stadium alight, really, that we're going to be judged on. You would have thought.
You would like to think so. Yeah, I mean, I thought we were a third of the way through the season now, third and a bit.
Yeah,
and apart from that horrible game, we haven't really been butchered out of sight by anybody.
We should not speak of,
exactly.
Ticking over nicely. Right, Gareth, we noticed the shape on the ball going forward was very interesting, particularly first half. I think it changed a little bit for the second, and it was like a 3-4-1-2. Gomez played in the hole. The left back, Revier, pushed onto the left wing. Cattermole dropped to make a back three, which was interesting. So all these people who sort of slag off Poyet for playing Connor on the wing, it wasn't exactly a sort of winger's role, was it?
No, they definitely had that system. Maybe we sort of matched up Leicester a bit when we had the ball, because they played a sort of diamond, didn't they? So we had that, and we've always said the fullbacks in Poyet's teams are very important, and that's why they are, because you push your fullbacks on like that and change the shape, and it means that other players can get involved from areas you'd prefer to see players like Connor Wigham around Stephen Fletcher rather than stuck out on the left. I think one of the most disappointing things about that is that their real weakness was their right fullback, and I don't know why we didn't try and exploit him a bit more. I mean, Wigham, he's a powerful runner. He's not exactly lightning quick, and there was a point in the first half where there was a long ball over the top and Wigham had the lad had about 20 yards on Wigham. It was Delatt, and Wigham caught him up by the time the keeper had got there, and the keeper had to clear it out.
Was interesting, because we couldn't decide at the time if because we kept going to Wigham all the time, even from the keeper. He was the outlet, the out ball all the time. We couldn't decide, so Gareth and myself, is he trying to isolate Wigham with Delatt specifically? But then again, we're saying on the ball he was often playing closer to Fletcher, so that would indicate not. If they weren't doing that, then possibly they should have, because he was our weak link.
It was almost like when Gordon Armstrong used to play and everything went to him on the halfway line on his head because he won it. Like you say, Wigham had the beating of that lad in the air every time, and it was a shame that he couldn't get something more in the box once he'd got away from him. And at the beginning of the second half when he swapped round, he did tend to play a bit more central, especially in that at that time.
He did, and they tried to make the link with Fletcher there, Gareth, now, but we keep saying that Wigham can hold the ball up. He's got a good touch. He controls well. It's what comes afterwards that frustrates, isn't it?
Well, criticise.
Or what doesn't come afterwards?
Criticise him a few weeks ago about his hold up play and his touch and his desire to want to hold the ball. That you couldn't question that at the weekend at all.
Back to like it was at the start of the season.
It was excellent.
Respect, yeah.
He was taking balls down difficult areas and he was keeping it. He was winning free kicks. I don't recall him giving the ball away in that situation, like being dispossessed. The issue comes when he's got to pass the ball.
Decide who to give it to.
Or shoot or make a decision. And I mean, there's little things like, I know he's trying to be positive and I'm probably nitpicking, but in the first half he did get in down the outside of Delatt, and he was sort of coming towards the box, and the defender is going to go and close that space out when he wants to, because he wants to obviously come into the box to try and get a shot away, but it was never on, and he does that, and that immediately closes up the opportunity, and then all he can do is really hit the defender. If he'd ran the line, just ran into the space and waited for the players coming into the box, we might have had an opportunity where he could have cut it back from a better position and he'd have got people coming onto the ball. I know I'm being hypercritical, but we have talked about Wickham's decision making at times, and maybe that was another example where it wasn't the best. But I wouldn't, I know I'm not exactly a massive Connor Wigham fan, but at the same time he did play well at the weekend. Generally he did all right. So
hear what Gus said, because he was asked about Connor Wigham after the game.
I think that sometimes people is a little bit unfair on Connor. Connor is doing a terrific job for us. He's doing something that we couldn't find in the summer. We couldn't find that Fabio Borini style. He's adapting well. He's playing. He linked well. He changed, flanks with Jono today. He created chances. I think it was one of the best games that the front three they play, but we didn't score. So it's a balance. But overall, I was pleased. I was calm. I was pleased. I was just trying to see what we can change just to win it without making a massive mistake. I know that, you know, you have to win games, but you need to be realistic as well, that sometimes if it's not happening, you cannot just throw it away.
Gus dropped the B-bomb there. We make a conscious decision or conscious effort not to mention the certain Italian's name. And Gus has went and done it there. But your thoughts on Conor Wickham generally, Sobs?
I enjoyed his performance in the first half, despite there being no real end product, and the fact that we started to use the fact that he can take a decent long throw that caused him a bit of bother from times, you know. So it's taken a while for him to discover that skill. So, but it was one of his better games.
You mentioned isolating the fullback there, Gareth, as well, and we were saying, well, if Delatt is their weak link, would it not be more logical to put Johnson or bring Buckley on and put him against him? He did in the second half. He changed Wickham over, didn't he, with Johnson, and then they changed back. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, they had.
I don't know how long it was for, but they definitely.
No, they.
You know, they did at one point, though, didn't they?
Well,
for whatever reason, he changed it back. Yeah.
Buckley played in the hole for a period, didn't he, when he came on?
Well, that was we'll get to that with the substitutions, because that was a bit strange, really, wasn't it? But I mean, again, going from memory, I guess he was just trying different things, but. Delatt was our weak link, and it just seems surprising that maybe he chose to play Buckley in some games and not others. You know, again, if we're being hypercritical, this would have been a game he would have fancied against that right back, I think.
I mean, we talked about in sort of ventured the idea that maybe if he played Johnson in sort of inside in that central midfield and brought Buckley on, pushed Johnson on from the middle, and then maybe try to get Wickham out there as well. Get the three of them, especially from sort of deep set pieces, and try and isolate him that way, because like Sobs was saying, Wickham was winning everything against him. So if he could have got flicks on, then you've got, you know, people like Johnson and Buckley getting in behind and going away from him. But you know, they just couldn't seem to. He was possibly one of the worst players I've ever seen in the Premier League, and I think that's the main disappointment, is that we didn't really isolate him so much, because he was such
and
a weak.
And find a way to, like I said, maybe outnumber him there to make it even harder for him. Yeah, interesting.
It's easy to sit here and sit at the match and sort of make these outlandish suggestions. But you know, like we touched on earlier, Gus has gone back to basics, as he said, and he's got to, because he's got to try and build. And I know sometimes the caution that he shows frustrates people and frustrates supporters, but you know, it's the short-termism puts that pressure on. You know, people want to see attacking football, and people see other teams going at sides and probably sides with worse players than us. If you look at like Leicester against Man United, would I guess be a prime example, and what they did, and people want to see that replicated. And you know, that's just not Poyet's style. He's not going to throw caution to the wind, because he doesn't want to lose.
I think that was summed up by, as you said, the start, when we were like questioning the lack of intensity, and I think he's made it clear. He sort of alluded to the fact in the clip there that Sunderland don't suit that game with the players I have. But just finally on the wing thing, Johnson and Wickham being on the other side, I'm guessing as well that he would want Johnson's work rate going back over on that side, because. What's the guy called? Play left
Schlupp,
back.
Was it Schlupp? He played left wing.
Exactly, left wing back, and he was very attacking minded, wasn't he? So I guess he thought Johnson would help him out defensively.
Yeah, but they had pace in both wide areas, and they had Schlupp and Mahrez. And like Vardy's quick. I mean, he's not much else, but he's fast. So you know, we can't afford to get turned. Like as good as you know O'Shea might be as a solid defender, he's not someone you want to get. Him getting tight into players and getting isolated and turned, like, because that's when the problems come.
Vardy was a bit of a Raj, wasn't he?
He's a Raj, a pure Raj. You look at his hair, just look at him, man.
I was looking forward to watching him, because you know you watch highlight shows and you know he's worked his way up from non-league, I think, hasn't he? So there's always that sort of romantic side of it, and a success story everybody likes, don't they? From rags to riches and all that. Yeah. And I was very, very disappointed with him, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I did talk about him earlier in the season, saying why can't we find somebody like that.
There's loads of Rajis kicking around Sunderland.
Yeah,
but I mean, he had no touch. He could have been sent off.
He's not a big fella.
The fourth time he hacked somebody down. But I guess the home crowd had a bit of influence there, didn't they?
Yeah.
With that one, but the atmosphere was good as well. I thought
That was decent.
Apart from the drum.
Yeah, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were at the other side of the ground, so it wasn't was too right bad for us. Yeah.
I was at the corner flag in front of it. That's
a bad idea.
Bad idea indeed. As the game went on, I was crying out for a change of midfield subs.
Mm-hmm.
I find it disappointing at the situation, generally, that Rodwell is deemed to be that far away he can't make the field, when you have both Larson and Gomez dying on the backsides after 65 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, at the Burnley game we mentioned earlier, I thought was, you know, probably Rodwell's best game for us. He was doing the box-to-box stuff and he was arriving to help out the forward and getting on the edge of the box in dangerous situations. And we thought the same, that, you know, if we're going to make a change now, he could change the style of the game, the pattern that we were playing in. It could have made a big difference against him.
Gaping hole in Sunderland's midfield, wasn't there? At one point, Gareth, when Leicester started to turn the screw a little bit the last 20 minutes, and Larson and Gomez, but obviously, you know, before the substitutions were made, but it was crying for Rodwell. It was a bit of a head scratcher, that one.
Yeah, I mean, the change, I mean, once we got the bookings, he could have taken, I think you said at the time, he could have taken any of them off, but he needed to take two of them off, really. I mean, the fact that Gomez was one of them, even though he wasn't on a yellow card, I mean,
Cattermole and Larson on the yellow card.
Cattermole and Larson on the yellow, and Larson got away with one probably. I think he did, might have. He probably should have been sent off. The referee was lenient. Cattermole, you know, it was a tackle which you're not allowed. You're not allowed to do tackles anymore. So that was obviously a straight red card because he did a sliding tackle on the floor. it was. They were sort of wanting a bit of a tightrope. Gomez, I don't know what your thoughts are on Gomez subs. I mean, we've talked about him before, and he's my Will Buckley, I guess, the other side of the coin, because we've talked about Buckley being a Marmite player.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people who maybe didn't watch the game live say they thought Gomez did quite well.
He does in parts, it looks nice, but when you think back on it, you think there's not much came out of it apart from that move that Fletcher couldn't should have scored.
I think
from.
He likes him, like you say, when we want to slow the game down. Gus is saying that we're making a conscious decision, team decision, to slow the game down, take the sting out of it. So I guess he sees him as an ideal person.
He does that. I mean, he carries it well over short distance and gives it, not always forward, but gives it to somebody fairly close, and we do retain possession that way.
Gareth, get off his back, eh?
He's too
handsome.
Slow. But just, I mean, there was a, like, you know, they were both knackered, him and Larson, and when they had that decent chance, when Pantelimon made a decent save, I can't remember the lad who went through the middle, I think it was the number 8, got in, like, played a little 1-2 on the edge of the box with Joa.
Matty James,
was it? And Gomez was just trotting, back. Things like that, when I see things like that, it annoys me, because, you know, he's got to be, even if he's not going to get there in that situation, he's got to be busting a gut to put pressure on, and he just was jogging back, and it's 65 minutes into a game, and you've got to be fitter than that. I mean, he's not exactly been plagued with injuries, has he? And, you know, he's got to be match fit, and he just doesn't look match fit either. I don't know, I'm just not having Gomez at all.
I think we've worked that one out, right? as it was, Bridcook came on and Katz shuffled forward a little bit. That's something we were crying out for last season, wasn't it? When we thought Cattermole was struggling in that deep line role and Bridcook seemed like the specialist. To my memory, that's the first time he's tried it, though.
I think it might have occurred on a couple of occasions. But
I think they've both been on, but you could actually see Katz move 10-15 yards up straight away.
Yeah.
I thought that got to his composure a bit personally, Cattermole, once he was in that position. He was playing the deep line thing, and he was spraying some lovely balls and getting forward, and then it was almost like he was a fish out of water again, because he's that accustomed to that deep line role now. But, I mean, again, Sobs, does that just highlight the fact that you have Cattermole on a yellow card and he would rather move him up than bring Rodwell on?
It is. I did think he was a little bit unlucky to get booked, although if you look at the technicalities of it, and with the rule book in your hand, then the referee was probably right, but it didn't seem to detract from his game. been a lot of people said, oh, he's going to wind himself right in now, but he didn't. He kept some people said, oh, he didn't control himself, but I thought he did, especially when he got walloped by.
And it's good that he trusts himself,
yes,
and that the manager trusts himself to do that now, because, you know, if that was 12 months ago, certainly 18 months ago, you would have said, you know, he's going to have to come off here.
So it is a good thing, and it works both ways, because he'll feel better for being trusted, and, you know, Poyet will feel better that he responds to being trusted. So it's one of those win-win situations.
And the Buckley one, as you mentioned, Gareth, was interesting there when he came on. What the hell happened there? We had some attacking players left on the field.
He went for it, as people would say. There was logic to it. I hadn't actually thought about the fact he might have moved Catamol on because he was booked, so that's quite a valid point. I never really thought about that. He's done it, I guess, in some ways, when he's brought Altidore on to play from wide and stuff in games where he's trying to keep as many attacking players on the field as possible. So maybe when we've got the ball, that's when he can manipulate the shape of the team.
The shape can change,
But when we haven't, we can try and remain solid. And you saw that towards the end of the game, where he definitely went sort of two up, Buckley in behind, and Johnson came over to was sort of marauding about a bit. That was
very lopsided, suddenly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess that was why Bridcut was. Why Bridcut was important to play then.
But it was all coming down their right hand side, so that's where they sort of were aiming their attacks. I don't know. But I mean, I think Johnson was a real positive. I don't know what you guys saw, because I don't know if he's quiet or is just, you expect more from him and you don't get it. But I don't know. I thought he was very good at the weekend.
I thought he did have a decent game. There were a couple of times when he was over on the left hand side, as we've mentioned earlier on, that we thought he could have taken his man on because he'd been identified as the weak link. But he preferred to play it inside, but he did okay at that, and he was at the heart of quite a few of the positive things
that
we did.
Then he scored too, had a decent shot, which was a much better save further inspection. Definitely a decent.
He was good. I thought Schmeichel had a very good game.
He did.
The both keepers were good, actually.
Well, I mentioned our keeper there. He makes you feel comfortable, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's been good. Bit like Mignone in a way that he had that bit of a shocker in the League Cup, and then when he's got into the team, slightly different circumstances. He's taking his chance with both hands.
But it's not. I mean, because even when Mignone got Player of the Season, I don't know what you think, Sobs. I always kind of felt there was a little bit of a clangor in him, and I know the Man City fans are quite critical of Pantilimon, actually, but you know, actually, the League Cup game, he had a little bit of a wobble, didn't he? But and certainly in the league games, he's looked okay, Sherwood.
He's looked fine. I mean, you're right about the City fans. They've said, the one I read the review from said he was a worse player when he left than when he arrived, and he didn't think much of him to start with, was he? He was too tall, but he does look a bit ungainly, and you think, is he going to get down well to low stuff? But I mean, that one, the save he made to set up Wes Brown's goal down at Palace, that was something special. So he commands the box, and as you've got to if you're a bloke that big.
And he bailed Wes Brown out again.
Yes, that was a very good save off. That. But I mean, that highlights what you say about Vardy's a little fella who runs very fast. He's a great big goalkeeper. He did everything right there by the book.
I think Vardy should have done better, but you've got to praise Pantilimon for
it. The Brown thing, it's a little bit concerned, isn't it?
Yeah, it's becoming too regular, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if we had two, our regular full-backs were fit, Virginia would be playing in there every week, I think.
And that's what we keep saying, these centre-halves are fighting for a place now, plus you have Quatters on the bench as well. You think Brown's got to be people see his age, but turning around and knocking the ball back into an open space and under hitting it, it's not really down the age.
It's down to lack of concentration. You would think.
He's turned the wrong way, hasn't he? For that chance, he's gone the wrong way. He's trying to roll the ball onto his right foot, but that's where the danger is. You know that someone's going to be running to you in that direction. So you don't want to give them a chance. You want to turn out away from danger, and things like that. You just think he's an experienced player making those sort of errors, and the errors are becoming sort of alarmingly regular. And I really like Wes Brown. and he's done really well to come back from those injuries. But maybe, you know, he's like, like we've said it before, the amount of stick O'Shea gets at times for I don't know why. But is it because he doesn't do things
spectacularly?
I've been
O'Shea's biggest critic in the past, but I think this season, I think this is the best he's played for us by a long way this season. And possibly it's down to the systems and formations again, because it, like you just touched on the fact earlier, you said there yourself, you said that he's quite slow on the turn and he gets beat on the turn. And we were seeing that a lot, and perhaps it's just the way Poyet sets up that he gets that protection a little bit more. And he's finding it easy to settle in than Brown. But it's coming from two fronts, isn't it, Gareth, as we've just said, because Sobs just said there, Virginie could move across when Jones, because Jones is nearly there. Quattis is on the bench, so
I think you could
be looking at the next game, possibly.
I mean, I bet Jones will be another fortnight, won't he? He's not going to chuck him straight back in.
But Quattis has been on the bench, though.
Yeah.
And that's Poyet's guy, isn't it? Fellow countryman and all that. That was his decision to sign him, so.
Do you think he'll take Brown out and put Quattis straight in?
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, because I wouldn't. If it was me, I wouldn't personally. But
I don't think he will.
Gus likes to spring surprises on you.
I don't think, like you said, I don't think he will. But it wouldn't surprise you at all if he did. Especially we've got two games coming up.
Yeah,
you know, very close together.
The hard game, so you think he's going to want to leave it settled, don't you? But talking about the back four being settled, Reveillez sort of. I'm not going to say prove people are wrong, because I think people are quite open minded towards it, but he's looking very composed.
He is. I'm quite happy with him. I mean, all we saw was an old Frenchman coming into town. And we didn't know much about him despite his history, but he's been very good.
Impressed, Gareth?
Yeah, but you guys haven't got earphones on, but I'm hearing some sort of strange music in the background.
I think it's coming from next door.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's quite good. I hope you guys can hear it. It's quite enjoyable.
It might have been my phone.
But anyway, Reveillez. That was his theme tune. Reveillez's theme tune is good, isn't it?
Bring it up, Sin. You're talking about, mate.
It's been very good. You sort of expect it, though, don't you, from somebody with a pedigree that he had to be. I would say he's like
a fullback. There was always a question, why had he not found a club, though? That's automatically what you look at somebody who started the season and you say, well, if he's that good, you know, why hasn't he been matched up somewhere?
Maybe just the right club or the right deal wasn't there for him, and we gave him what he wanted.
People aren't desperate for money anymore, are they? They've made the fortunes. When you get to his age, you can say, well, I'll leave it for a little bit and see what happens, I guess.
And I guess we're going to keep on going on about the fullbacks not having the attacking fullbacks, aren't we, every week. It's like the Barini thing. We can't get through a podcast without mentioning it, because they made such a difference. And although we're saying Reveillez has been excellent, but he's more like Virginie in that position, isn't he, where he's set steady, solid, but he's limited going forward.
Yeah, he's not going to burst forward. Yeah. He's not going on about his age again, but he's not at that age. You're not going to see lightning bursts of speed like Van Aanholt was the, you know, he's very fast when he gets going, and that's the big part of his attacking game, which you're not going to see in a guy who's been around as long as Riviera has.
Certainly. So anything else that anyone would like to add before we speak about Sob's book?
No. Well, they've got the three games coming up are hard, and the fact that they're all in the space of a week.
Yeah. If you think the analysis this week's light on the ground, we'll make up for next week, because we've got to discuss the Chelsea game, and then we'll preview the Man City game.
It could be one of those. It could be an opportunity to kick on and get some surprising results, or it could
kick
be
the podcast on.
No, yeah, or you know, it could be coming in a week's time and in a 2 weeks' time, sorry, and being. You know, worried because we've lost three games. You know, it's going to be a real test the next week, and that's when these sorts of results will really show for what they are. Because, a point away from home, I wasn't too disappointed. But you look at the Burnley game, the QPR game, the Swansea home game, which were the better side and didn't win, the Leicester game. If you take maybe even two or three more points from those four games, things look a lot better. Because if you lose, it's not unfathomable that we'll lose these next three games, because we're playing good teams.
Although Liverpool are pushing that theory.
Yeah, but they've still got good players.
Yeah, of course.
That's when we'll know.
And if any, as we all know, if ever a team need to turn their form around, a game against Sunderland is just what the doctor ordered.
Barini, yep. Yeah. Come on and
Don't even go there. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have a little chat with Sobs about his book. Okay, if you're looking for a good stocking filler for Christmas and you like reading about Sunderland, which I'm sure you do if you're a Sunderland fan and you can read, then Sobs has a book out now called The Greatest Escape. Sobs, do you want to talk people through it?
Well,
it's pretty self-explanatory, yeah. But, you know...
Is it about the film?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. There is a motorbike on the front of it, jumping over a fence. I guess if ever a season screamed out, have a little book written about it, last season was it. Not because
it's
we actually...
one for the memory banks, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't know if we actually won anything, but... It was either a really good season with some really bad bits or a really bad season with some really good bits. Mm-hmm. Take it either way.
So does this just document the games or is it more, what kind of narrative is it?
It goes from basically the end of the season before, a little bit of a filler on the situation with the mad Italian chappy, how things set up at the beginning of the season, what were our expectations were, and it basically goes through month by month saying, mm-hmm. What happened during the month?
Oh, so it's a full season.
It does a full season, yeah.
Right, okay. So it doesn't start from say losing 5-1 at Tottenham or something.
No,
which was when things got ridiculous. Because to be fair, you could probably write a book just on those handful of games, couldn't you?
Yeah, then it starts at the beginning and finishes at the end. Strangely enough.
well, I'm glad to hear that.
Your basic textbook.
Yeah, that's
narrative.
The way it works. And the good thing about it is you know it's going to have a happy ending.
Yeah. Absolutely, if you're a Sunderland fan, certainly.
Exactly, yeah.
So does it do it, so is it game-by-game sort of match report style, or is it your experience going to the game?
It's a little bit of both. It would have been quite easy to take each match report I did last season and stick them all together, but then some I do in one style when I'm in a good mood, and sometimes I'm in a bad mood, and it just wouldn't link up. So there's some matches are dealt with in much more detail, such as the Manchester United second leg away from home. Nil-nil draws tend not to get much, but it basically goes through changes in the team. What mm-hmm. what De Canio was trying to achieve, Lord alone knows what it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, does
anybody and then
know that?
You know, how Poyet came in, what was going through his mind at Swansea when he watched that goings on down there, how he's tried to build, what he's tried to build, and use the players that he's got in, and it takes it month by month in the games within that, and basically at the end of each one, without spoiling the whole thing, it sums up on an ongoing basis where we are, who we're around, what we've got to do to catch up those just above us, etc, etc.
Mm-hmm. So where people go if they want to get a copy of that Love Supreme shop?
If you go to the Love Supreme shop, they've got loads of them there. They've got
give it time.
Well, they came at 2:30 today, so we're not done badly, so being there putting them all in envelopes this afternoon to get shipped out to those good people who ordered it in advance. Mm-hmm. I won't say pre-order because that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But there you go.
And both of them will receive their copies today.
They'll be going in the post today, first thing in the morning, to be arriving later this week. And they can also buy it online if you go to whatever our email address is. I Love Supreme. It's in there somewhere.
Yeah, people will know that. I'm sure you know. Yeah. I'm sure people have been going Google and find that out. Can you ever remember a season like that as a fan?
No, absolutely. I've been. Been through an awful lot of seasons. Mostly they've been really good or they've been really bad. Mm. Not many have been so horrific and so,
mid-table mediocrity, the top flight doesn't really happen much.
No, not happened. But it's had so many games that were such standout things, like winning at Chelsea, getting that drop Man City when we should really have won, and beating Man United in over two legs in the cup, and they were real standout quality moments.
Exhausting last season, kind of, wasn't it, really?
At times it was.
It was the best worst season, as was said.
It seemed like it went on for about 3 years, didn't it?
that's why you go, that's why you support Sunderland. I guess it's the fleeting moments of glory in amongst the dire moments.
In and around
the dire moments make it, all the more, pleasurable when Phil Bardsley scores in the last minute of extra time at Old Trafford, and so you'll never forget that.
It's kind of like, because we wore that yellow strip away, didn't we? And I remember saying before, it's kind of like last season you felt like you weren't enjoying it, because we left it till the last minute, and you enjoyed that little spell. But then, like, on reflection, and we're only a few months later, and it's sort of, you're already starting to think about that yellow kit. You've been sort of symbolic of a great season.
Those things we did in that yellow kit, yeah. It's a strange one.
Crazy.
Brilliant, yeah.
That's what sticks in your mind, isn't it?
So would you rather that again, or mid-table mediocrity? What do people want?
I wouldn't mind a cup final again. That's why my dad always used to go on about the... Like, I had that sort of modern attitude towards the cups where I wasn't that bothered. But because my dad was at, you know, the cup final, and he would always be gutted when we got knocked out of the cup, because he wants to have that experience again that he had, you know, 40-odd years ago.
He had it briefly with 92.
Mm-hmm.
Aye, he did, but then, you know, that was 24 years ago, so 22 years ago, sorry. So, it's just like that yearning for that, like, one last time, you know, to have that feeling again that you had 40-odd years ago when you won the cup. And the fact that we haven't done anything like that since then, I think that's now you kind of understand it was like that was my first cup final last year, and it was, you know, it was just amazing, wasn't it? It was just a fantastic occasion, a fantastic weekend, you know, that used up. I was wondering, I didn't have many holidays left when it came towards the end of the year. I was sort of usually quite good with them, and I was thinking it was purely because of the I used them all up in the first few months of the year, because I was going to the cup games and stuff like that, and going to London, going to Wembley, and it was, you know, you'd never forget it. It was amazing.
Is anybody thinking of Fabio Barini specifically?
Are we
longing for him still? Gus clearly is.
I was trying to do the whole book without mentioning him in this in mind.
That's impossible.
I failed.
Yeah, I thought you would dedicate a whole chapter to him, if anything.
No, not quite.
Do you think he'd celebrate if he scored against Sunderland? That would be a kick, isn't it?
Oh, God.
Imagine that. Oh, dear. Wouldn't like him then.
Goes mental, scores a win in the last minute. He starts kissing the Liverpool badge, and sticks his hand in his mouth and stuff.
That would be a horrible moment.
All right. Gav, do you want to tell people about our live pod enthusiastically? Because I got in trouble for my turn last time.
If you want.
Well, that, you know.
Okay, I'll do it then.
Maybe
right.
Improve on that. But you're smiling, that's a start.
Yes, so we are having another live podcast. I'm sure some of you have been to them before. And this time it is on the 8th of December, which is a fortnight, at the Duncow in Sunderland. I think we'll christen the function room with the event. I don't think there's another event there before ours, so get along if you haven't checked out that pub yet. There's one reason to come, because it's a good pub.
Come despite me in Gareth, say.
Second reason, Martin McFadden will be on. I mean, as Sobs knows, you know, what a delight that'll be for everyone. Thirdly, Gary Bennett's going to be there. He's going to be on the panel. James Hunter from The Chronicle, who's also always a very good guest on the show. So, it'll be the usual format. And if you've been at live pods...
Summarise Sunderland's season so far as well. It's a decent point to do that. Yeah. We'll be nearly halfway. And of course, with Gary being there, we'll give people a chance to
ask
some questions to him about, you know, his time at Sunderland and stuff as well. So it is going to be better than just a bog standard podcast.
Yeah. So you know, I've been up the room. It looks great. There's a bar up there, so you won't have to go downstairs. Toilet facilities on the floor as well. I'm really selling that. I'm giving you all of the amenities and facilities that'll be available to you. So get yourself along. Tickets are only £4. So get yourself on. You'll be able to find the ticket if you go to the LS shop and go to the MISC section, or if you go on our website, it's sticky at the top, wisemensay.co.uk. Click the link through there, and you'll be able to buy tickets. There's probably about half the amount of tickets that we've put up for sale on there. So, and they are limited. So I'd move quickly. I know there'll be people out there thinking, I quite fancy that. I'll wait.
I'll wait until the
weekend. And then you'll miss out. It happened last time. God knows how it sold out last time, but there were disappointed people, which is incredibly difficult to believe. But yes, that was a long and laboured way of saying buy
good.
Tickets.
You know, the podcast, we're a bit light on content this week, so if there's any
out.
Week you can do it, you can drag anything out. If there's anything else anybody else would like to drag out before we go.
No,
didn't think so. Right,
rubbish.
Okay. Thanks, Sobs, for coming on again this week. And I'd say next week it'll be... a bumper edition, really, because what we're going to do is Sobs gave us one of these books to give away, so we will get back to having the competition because we haven't had one of those for a few weeks. So we'll, on Twitter and Facebook, just keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. We'll, if you go on Twitter and Facebook as well, it's on the ELS one. Well, on the Facebook main, sorry, primarily, if you go on there, you'll be able to, there's a competition on there that went 2 tickets for the podcast as well, so keep an eye out for that. I should have mentioned that before.
So we'll have that next week, as well as talking about the Chelsea game and previewing the Man City game. So,
exciting. It should be, hopefully it'll be jubilant, like last time after we played Chelsea away from home.
Yeah, well, we beat one record last season, didn't we? Ended Mourinho's record, so we'll end the unbeaten record for this season as well.
We'll have a go.
Wishful thinking, why not? Thanks for listening. Over and out.